Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Lisa H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Tennessee. Today is Wednesday, March 20th, 2024, and this is the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we're reading from the Big Book in Bill's story on page 10. We'll be reading the first and second paragraph that begins, "He talked for 2 hours," and ends, "That wartime day in Old Winchester Cathedral came back again." And we'll be commenting on both paragraphs. Today's readers, thank you for your service this morning. The 12 Steps, Stephanie R., 12 Traditions, Toby K., readers of the text, Nancy R., Kathy S., and Susan S.H. Our newcomer greeter is Anne-Marie M. Our second hour host is Ramona A., and announcements will be given by Nancy C. this morning. The reference numbers for yesterday, Tuesday, March 19th, 2024, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21,235. That's 21235. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21,236. That's 21236. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Stephanie R. to please read the 12 steps.
Good morning, everyone. Stephanie R. calling from Missouri. Here are 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Stephanie R., and I will now ask Toby K. to please read the 12 traditions.
Hi, this is Toby K., Long Island, New York. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop overeating. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or communities directly responsible for those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me serve as I pass.
Thank you, Toby K. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book in story on page 10. We'll be reading and commenting on the first two paragraphs, beginning, he talked for 2 hours, ending, that wartime day in old Winchester Cathedral came back again. And I'll now ask Nancy R. to please begin reading. Nancy, star 1.
Good morning, Nancy R., recovered compulsive overeater from Northwest Illinois. We talked for hours. Childhood memories rose before me. I could almost hear the sound of the preacher's voice as I sat on still Sundays way over there on the hillside. There was that proffered temperance pledge I never signed. My grandfather's good-natured contempt of some church folk and their doings. His insistence that the spheres really had their music, but his denial of the preacher's right to tell him how he must listen. His fearlessness as he spoke of these things just before he died. These recollections welled up from the past. They made me swallow hard. That wartime day in old Winchester Cathedral came back again. So as I read these two paragraphs and I think about how I thought like Bill thought. So he's thinking about memories of his, what I hear here now when I read it is memories of how he was cautioned about Stafford Temperance Pledge. So, you know, he had an opportunity to commit to not drinking, and he never signed it. And, you know, preachers, hearing the sound of preachers in the past and his grandfather's beliefs. His grandfather's not thinking that preachers are the right to tell him how he must listen. And how all these recollections welled up from his past and made him swallow hard. And then he thought about that day in Winchester Cathedral when he felt the presence of God and saw that tombstone, ominous warning that he didn't take part in. So I think about, so how did I think like this? I think of my childhood and my childhood memories and my family's, my parents' beliefs and the way I was raised to believe in God, and being bored listening to the preachers give their sermons. And I always believed in God and in the teachings of the church I was raised in. And I don't believe in all the teachings of the church that I was raised in now, but I am glad for that space of knowing that there's a power greater than myself that I can turn to. And what I have found in working this program is a even more personal relationship with that higher power. And walking with that higher power daily, giving my life over to that power so that I have relief from my eating disorder and this crazy addictive thinking. And that's what I have to share. Thank you. I'll pass.
Thank you, Nancy R., for getting us started. And although we value your experience, we do ask that you limit your shares to every third day in order that others might share their experience as well. So if you've shared on any of the vision meetings on Monday or Tuesday, we ask you to hold back this morning. Who would like to comment on what was read?
Harlan G.
Katie G. from
Harlan.
Boston.
Grayson KP from Pennsylvania.
Melissa.
Katie G. Melissa, I got you, Katie.
Anayeta.
I got
R.
You might have to spell that for me.
Okay. C H A N A Y E.
Elise N.
A. And the C is silent. Anayeta. Thank you.
Thank you, Anayeta and Elise.
Elise.
So
Elise N.
And okay. I have. Oh, when I got you, Vasa.
Thank you.
Harlan G, Katie G, somebody KP. Can you tell me who that is? There was somebody, I thought it was KP. And then Melissa C, Hanyetta, you'll have to give me the first initial of your last name, Elise and Mbasa O. Anybody else?
That was Jason KP.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
Okay. This is a great lineup. We are going to begin with Harlan G., followed by Katie G. Good morning, Harlan.
Good morning. Thank you very much, and thanks for your service. I'm Harlan G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in Scottsdale, Arizona. Let's take a look at the extreme significance of these two paragraphs. Bill Wilson is going to start drinking in 1917. This is now 1934. This is November of 34. For the better part of 17 years, he has been dead drunk. He has consumed amounts of alcohol that would stun a hippopotamus. His life has been laid waste. His marriage is on the rocks. His absolute life is carnage. He is being presented a God-based solution. and he doesn't like it. He is resistant to this idea of I've got religion. He is resistant to this idea of a spiritually based solution to his problem. Now, this sentence here, that wartime day in Old Winchester Cathedral, came back again. Why is that so significant that he's going to mention it three times in 16 pages? Bill Wilson is looking in Winchester Cathedral at the grave of a man who drank himself to death. His father, Bill's father, is an alcoholic who has been absent most of his life. Bill Wilson's grandfather is an alcoholic whose marriage was a shambles because of his drinking. And he is looking in through his mind on those Sundays back in East Dorset, Vermont, and his grandfather's good-natured contempt of some church folks and their doings. Now, in me, I did not have atheism. I'm not knocking atheism. I am not judging it in any way, shape, nor form. I am saying I have always believed that there was a God. However, I'm not alone here. I believe that he was out to screw me. Why did he make me fat when he could have made me thin? Why did he make me ugly when he could have made me handsome? Why did he make me poor when he could have made me rich? And on and on and on and on. God didn't give me what I felt I deserved. He didn't make me in the image of what I saw in my friends. And so my anger toward God grew and grew and grew and grew. It wasn't that I didn't believe in God. It was that I was PO'd at God. He didn't do what I wanted him to do. So, of course, I resisted this idea of a spiritually based solution. But when he thinks back about this old-time day in Winchester Cathedral, he is not only remembering he has been rich, he has been poor, he has lived on Park Avenue, he has lived in his in-law's apartment. He has run the gambit, and through everything, he has the denominator, the common denominator is he has been drunk.
Time.
And so he is thinking to himself, and this idea is germinating in his mind, although he is going to resist it a bit because we're not going to really get to the nexus of the problem and the solution until page 12. But he is thinking, this may not just be a solution to his problem. It may be the only solution to his problem because he has tried everything else. He has been under the care of Silkworth twice. He has been in and out of Towns Hospital. He has done everything he could willpower-wise, as I did. He has done everything medically indicated, as I did, and the problem was still there. So here's a drunk in Ebbie Thatcher. Not only is Ebbie not drinking, he is happy in his release. He's happy in his release. And Bill has never seen that before in his entire life. He has seen men not drinking, but they weren't happy about it in his first two hospitalizations. But Ebbie seems quite content. And he is seeing something in Ebbie he's never seen before. And maybe this God thing is worth a try. And that's why he's remembering that day in Winchester Cathedral again. And with that, I will pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Harlan G. And Katie G., you're up, followed by Jason KP.
Good morning, everyone. This is Katie G., and I'm a recovered compulsive eater, anorexic and bulimic in Boston. You know, for me, I've been taught that this paragraph is about Bill really taking step two. And I was just thinking about, you know, my own childhood memories. And, you know, for me too, like, I've always believed in a power greater than myself. And I have fond memories of the church. But then I have so much contempt because of things like homophobia and racism and all the outside issues of man, right, that came between me and God. And it was only this disease, this hateful, horrible, insidious disease that started with my earliest memories. I have alcoholism, put the food in there. I don't have alcoholism, and it started way before I took that first bite. I needed a good, hard, you know, hot fudge sundae on the way to kindergarten. I felt terribly uncomfortable in my skin. And coming into Overeaters Anonymous, crawling in to Overeaters Anonymous, I had to have another solution. And slowly over time, I've been here for 20 years, I have started to revisit a God that is bigger than me. And I have accepted a lot of things I never wanted to accept. I have accepted that I live in man's world. And in man's world, there are many traumatic, horrible things that I cannot explain. I don't try to anymore. I can't ask why. Why is a management question, and it is way above my pay grade. But I'll tell you what I can see is that God is like, you know, in London, I've been told that in the olden days, for lack of a better word, they lit up the lights right on the street, and it's dark out, so you can't see where the lighter is, right? But you can see where he was when you look back at the street, if that makes any sense. You can see the lights. And that's how God has been for me, is I can't necessarily, or I couldn't necessarily see where he is right now, but I can see where he was. And I can see that God has worked in synchronicities for me, through commonalities, through picking up the phone and saying, I can't do this anymore. I am in AA and I'm binging my brains out on gum, and I have the kind of physical demoralization that only compulsive eaters have, but everybody else in my other 12-step programs say, you know, don't worry about it, and I'm dying. Please help me. Please tell me what to do, right? And something happened. Like, I got on the phone with someone yesterday. We had talked maybe via text. Immediately, we spoke the language of the heart. Why? Because this whole thing is about God. And in our spiritual fellowship, we find God. And in finding God, we find ourselves. And that whole process is important, vital to my life, because it is God who's going to do the changing. It is God who's going to change me from a resentful, hateful woman to a woman who only wants to be an agent for God today. Right? I want to live my life in the 12 steps and help others, so that I don't have to eat today. I do not want to die from compulsive eating, and I get to live with God. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Katie G. And Jason KP, you're up, followed by Melissa C.
Good morning. Jason KP, recovered compulsive eater, bulimic, outside of Philadelphia here in Pennsylvania. Sitting at the table with Harlan and Katie and Melissa coming up, I feel grateful to be here. As I look at this paragraph, you know, sometimes I'll talk to people and they'll say, you know, well, I'm not abstinent and I'll call you back in 24 hours. And I say, hold on, let's talk. I'm really glad Ebby didn't go up to Bill and say, oh, Bill, I want to share this message, but you're drinking. Come back to me in 24 hours, 48 hours when you're sobered up. And for me, what I see here is that Bill is having an experience. You know, the paragraph before, he says, he came to offer me something. Was I interested? Of course I was. I was hopeless. Bill's curiosity is piqued. It's piqued by Ebby's countenance, his demeanor, his maybe a light in his eyes, a demonstration of a walking miracle in front of him. And Bill, at the end of this paragraph, he's swallowing hard. He's remembering all these things, experiences of his childhood. And it sounds like what I'm reading out of this is when his dad or grandfather spoke with conviction and a lack of fear in the face of death of certain convictions, Bill's starting to see, I had always believed in God. The very next paragraph, he says, I had always believed in God. And so he's swallowing hard, and what I see this is his conscience. He's being convicted. He's being inwardly rearranged, in a sense, as he's considering new things, as he's opening his mind to new things. And to me, this is how this process happens. We sit with people, we share our experience, and you know, I was talking to a guy last night. He said, oh, I'm not even fully sober. I just was out of the food. I said, I don't care. I'm going to talk to you. I want you to consider these things. And I shared some of my character defects. I shared some of the ways I used to manifest and sometimes still manifest my character defects. And I'd say, does that resonate with you? I'd stop for a minute. And he'd go, huh, yeah. He'd say, how do you understand me so much? How do you understand me? I say, because this is me. I had all of these things. And that's what's happening here is this beautiful connection. You know, Katie referred to it as the language of the heart. But it's just this commonality of experience to say, you know, you'd say, how do you know me? I said, because I've gone through all these things. I've looked at these things. I've asked God to remove these things. And there's such a profound impact we can make. And again, Bill's drinking alcohol here. I think for me, I try to be really flexible. This guy who called me last night, he says, I'm not even sober. I'm just out of the, not even a day out of the food. I said, I don't care. Let's talk. Let's talk. And I said, I think some things can get in. I said, you're going to get sober. We're going to talk about these things tomorrow, too. We're going to keep doing work tomorrow. This is a great paragraph. I'm happy to be here, and with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Jason KP. And Melissa C., you're up, followed by Henyetta.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. Thanks so much for your service. I'm Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in New York, and I'm really grateful to come after Jason share. I was kind of thinking that too. Like, I mean, I'm picturing for a second that Abby came and Bill was openly drinking, and they actually wound up talking for hours. I mean, I'm thinking, like, first of all, this whole story about Abby showing up, you know, even it starts, you know, few paragraphs earlier with the door opened. Like, to me, there's something so spiritual about even that statement, that there already God was at work here. That's what I get, because I don't know, but I don't know about everybody else, but when I was interrupted by a binge, the last thing I wanted to do was to entertain any conversation that talked to me about anything of a solution. What I wanted to do was usher the person out the door so I could get right back on eating. And here already, there's this change, this shift, because they're talking for hours. And, you know, and what they're talking about is a simple religious idea and a spiritual, a practical program of action for hours. Like, you know, and you know, the other thing that grabbed me was the word contempt, because while Bill is recalling, you know, his grandfather's good-natured contempt of church folk and their doings, I know for me there's nothing good-natured about my contempt for other people and their doings, because when I have contempt, it means that I have an attitude. Sorry, that's my dog. In that, I have a sense of smug superiority. Like, I think it's beneath my consideration. And only, you know, I think back to myself. Who did I have that attitude towards? Well, people in OA, to be honest, who were like, I don't know, they were doing this OA thing way too seriously. I wanted OA light. You know, and I had a contempt for that attitude. Yes, I had a contempt for God, too, thinking that, you know, here I was in, like, morbid obesity, tremendous pain and discomfort, but other people's suggestions were somehow beneath my consideration. And what cracked open, you know, for me was, I think, what cracked it open for Bill in the paragraph before. I was interested when I was hopeless, and there's a great gift in hopelessness. And I don't want to ever be, you know, have an attitude of contempt, because Abby didn't have it towards Bill. He came and he spoke without contempt. And thanks. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Melissa C. And Henyetta, if you'll give me the first initial of your last name, you're up, followed by Elise N.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for your service. My name is Henyetta R.
from North Texas. So thank you so much. And I don't mind ever spelling it because it's really hard. And anyway, this paragraph just jumped out the fact that he thought back, his memories, childhood memories came back for me, some childhood memories of when I was in the synagogue, and if I heard the rabbi talking, I don't remember exactly what he was talking, but he always talked about the portion in the Torah, the Bible, that we read that week. And I just was always like, I loved just listening to his voice. I mean, I loved listening to what it sounded like. I always was very lifted by what he was saying. And I always went, when I went to the synagogue, I always sat next to my grandmother, which I absolutely loved. And I would always get lost, and she was always showing me which page to we're on. And it was just lovely. And then after services, there was always a get-together with food and drinks. And I remember very vividly that that was fun for me. I loved being there because it was all kinds of foods and sweets and stuff. But there was also liquor all over the place. Nobody set up the liquor. Nobody said that we couldn't have it. If we wanted some, we went over, we poured ourselves a little shot, and we drank the bourbon, or I drank bourbon, or scotch, or whatever it was there. So nobody told us we couldn't or we hadn't, or it was very open. And part of that makes me think, why did it become so addicted? But it's just in my DNA. I'm just an addictive person. I get addicted to anything I touch, do, or whatever. It doesn't matter. I become addicted very easily. So I have to be really careful with everything. So it really brought me back to all of that, which I always loved God. I always knew that he was there for me. I became to the point where, not that I thought he wouldn't help me. I was thinking, why would he want to help me? Because I was so bad. I did so many things wrong. I turned my back on God, and I told him that I was going to do everything I could to make him see how mad I was. And I stopped following any of the rules, and I became, you know, I ended up becoming a compulsive eater and a drunk and I was a pill popper and I smoked pot, and you know, I just, whatever it was, I was real promiscuous. Thank God there were no AIDS back then. And why did I do all of that? You know? And I don't know. And well, there we go. Thank you. I guess we won't know this time. I pass. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Hanayeta R. And Elise N., you're up, followed by Vasa O. Elise, press star 1. We can't hear you.
Thank you. Thank you for your service. I just wanted to express, you know, I guess I was, what I'm in the middle of, or what I've had again, is kind of a spiritual awakening, the same way that he was having when he remembered those memories. And I had one early in program where, you know, I knew that God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself when I first lost weight, and I wanted to thank God, and I ended up getting into my own religion eventually. And recently I've gone through a lot of lowered feelings, you know, like depression, anxiety, fear, financial insecurity, lots of fears. And, you know, I stayed absent. I kept working 10 steps. And my sponsor said, sometimes, you know, we get stuck. Sometimes, you know, wasn't willing to turn it over, and it doesn't get lifted right away. And that's where I was for so long. And I've woken up for the last 3 weeks or more without anxiety, without resentment, without fears, without fears of financial insecurity. And that's even when you know, I have work, but I'm looking for more work, and the same circumstances are there. But, you know, my sponsor said, if you just don't give up, you just keep asking. And I want to thank everybody I've spoken to and that's been there for me. I've had people I've called and they say, let's pray together. And, you know, and I have applied help. I have a therapist and she's been helping. And I'm just so grateful to God that sent me so many messengers and for, you know, it's hard to say it, but I feel that I'm grateful. I'm a compulsive eater. Because I don't think I would have ever reached out to find God if I wasn't, and I wouldn't have found my own religion, and there's so much there. And there was a time when I thought I would never say that, and I'm still, you know, I've lost 75 pounds this year, but I'm still not nearly at my goal weight, and it doesn't matter. It's what my sponsor has told me, and it's so true. It's if I focus on the weight, then I'll lose my recovery. And if I focus on the recovery, I'll lose the weight in God's time, not in my time. So grateful that you all are here, and I'm beginning to have a God squad. I've called a lot of you, and you've called me, and people have been there through this. I've given my name on this line, and I've said that I'm having a lot of fear, and I've gotten 4 or 5 calls during a day. Do you want to talk? I've been through this. So I am just so grateful just to not wake up with fear, just to wake up with gratitude. And thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Elise N. And Vasa O., please share with us.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Vasa, grateful recovered compulsive overeater calling from Port Charlotte, Florida. Thank you, moderator, for leading the meeting. And somebody's unmuted. And thank you for everybody. Yes, I can identify with all of you. So again, these two paragraphs reminds me where I have been, where I am today, and where I'm going. And somebody is unmuted. Please press star 1 to mute. I get distracted. So it looks like Abby.
We lost you, Vasa. Want to press star 1 and begin again?
Sorry.
Start again, Vasa.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Again, I'm Vasa, grateful recovered compulsive overeater, calling from Port Charlotte, Florida. Thank you, moderator, for your service and everybody's service, your shares. And I can relate with Bill's story a lot, even though I was not an alcoholic, but I was using the alcoholic foods to put in my body, which I didn't know they were alcoholic foods. But anyways, so Abby's talking to Bill while Bill is still drinking, and my Abby that got me to the program, she got me ready. It took about 1 week before she took me to my first meeting, and I was very interested at what she had to say and what she looked, you know, and yeah, a lot of memories. And we spent many, many hours. She was also my friend, had found the program a year or two before me. And we hadn't seen each other for a while. But anyways, you know, and I remember her sharing about her memories and my memories as going through with the food addiction, about, you know, childhood things. And I could relate. I just felt I was so ready and willing. I wanted to hear more and more and more what she had. She gave me so much hope before she took me to my first meeting. And I did have God in my life, but I didn't really have a loving God, a kind of fearful, punishing God. My father was a preacher in the church, and so I grew up in the church for many years. And I remember feeling very, very proud of my father when listening on his preaching. But I also, my father was struggled with alcohol, and my mom was she struggled with the food addiction. So I remember saying, if I don't get the help that they are offering me here, I'm just going to die, you know, overweight, miserable, and fat. And my disease was getting progressive, because with everything I tried, I couldn't do it any longer. So I was just ready. I wanted to hear more and more. And I'm so grateful I had the disease, because I would have never been in the places where I am today in my recovery, you know, going back to school, getting a job, you know, being abstinent. That was a miracle that I tried to do for many years. I couldn't do for myself. And God gave me that first, the physical, and the rest. Thank you. You'll hear another time. God bless.
Thank you, Vasa O. And we are in Bill's story on page 10, reading, we've read and commenting on the first two paragraphs that begin, he talked for hours, and ends, that wartime day in old Winchester Cathedral came back again. And who else would like to share this morning?
Sarah, Anita J.
I heard sure. Anita J. Somebody else from Massachusetts?
Sarah.
Sarah, okay.
Sean
Tony
C.
Sean.
Deborah.
What's your last name? I heard Deborah.
Tony B. Scotland.
Thank you, Tony B.
Amelia O.
I haven't. Say again.
Amelia O.
Amelia. Okay. Y'all are going to have to give me some last initials. I have Anita J., Sarah, Sean, Deborah, Tony B., and Amelia O. Anita J., you're up, and you'll be followed by Sarah.
Thank you. Thank you so much. This is Anita J. calling from Massachusetts, recovered. This, I've been trying to put into words how I came to find God. But it's hard. I always believed, like Bill, I always believed in a God. But it was misty. There was no clarity about it. And when a lot of, you know, unhappy things happened in my family with an alcoholic, mentally ill mother who ended up 13 years in a mental hospital before she was finally released. And I'm the one filled with shame about that. It just seemed like the God didn't pay much time putting me with some people that could nurture and care for me. It was, you know, I didn't understand about what is God's role in our lives. And it isn't, I've just come to see that he was always there. Because if he hadn't been there, I would have died years ago at the hands of my mother while she was in a drunken stupor or whatever you call it. I was too little to know what the heck was happening. But I was discovered where she had put me, and I was discovered for a reason, to live this life that God wanted me to live. And so he's always been in my life, but I just spent so much time crying about, you know, here's my husband. He did not marry me to hear this kind of stuff. But the thing is, it all came to understanding. Once I had the 12 steps, once I understood alcoholism, once I understood that my compulsive overeating was identical. It was identical. That was something I did not want to know. Now it's a comfort. Now there's no judging. Somebody mentioned that about no judging. Why would I judge? I don't happen to have that one. But put something that came out of the freezer in front of me and I'll act like a drunk. But it doesn't come in a bottle. I don't do that anymore. I get filled up in other ways, in God's ways, listening to all you guys. And I feel closeness every morning here with, to all of you. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Anita J. And Sarah, you're up if you'll give us the first initial of your last name, followed by Sean.
Hi. Good morning, everyone. I'm grateful to be here. Sarah M. from Massachusetts. So, yeah, I love this part of the story when Bill is reflecting on his childhood and his relationship to God. It got me thinking, you know, as I grew up in my home, my mother was a great God pusher. And, you know, as an eight-year-old, I'd go to her needing some help, and her response would always be, oh, just pray about it. And, you know, as time went on, that just drove me crazy. And I couldn't stand to hear about God from her. So, you know, I operated through light. Someone was just talking about OA light. I did God light. I only reached out to God when things were really bad, and then it was, please help me. You know, but through coming into OA and starting to work the steps, as it's laid out in my big book, my idea of God has changed so dramatically. You know, I look now, today I look as God as the great comforter in my life, the great interpreter when I'm having, you know, issues and I really need him to help me, you know, convey a message. I turn to God, the great lover of humor. You know, I've learned in this program to attach many positive qualities to God that I never used to. This program has been such a blessing for me. I mean, I came here to get control of my compulsive eating. And as a bonus, I end up getting a great relationship with God, who is now, instead of, you know, some entity that I just run to in times of crisis, I turn to him every morning and ask him to help to get through this day sober, eating, and to treat others as I would want to be treated myself. Such a gift. Thank you all for being here today. It's a pleasure listening to you. I'll pass.
Thank you, Sarah M. And Sean, you're up, followed by Deborah.
Good morning. This is Sean P. calling from California. Yeah, gosh. I love hearing about our past conceptions of God and how we relate to God. I grew up in a youth group that was very loving and supportive and God-centered. And so I always had a pretty good relationship with God. And I became so captivated by this idea that I found myself wanting to be higher power. I wanted to be the savior of the world, and it has turned out to not be such a good thing for my spiritual life. Surprise, surprise. You know, especially getting in a program, you know, like the big book talks about the director trying to run the show. That was definitely me. You know, I wanted to tell other people how they should be and how I could lead them to a better life. And, it was just ego driven, you know? And so, I've been working on steps 1 and 2 and, trying to reconceive my relationship with God, you know, moving from the judging puppeteer God of my childhood to a more inclusive, sort of all-encompassing God that exists within and through all of us and in and through me and connected to a deeper self, a wiser self that's part of me but is not me. And so, yeah, just grateful for this program that's helping me get out of my ego, helping me get out of my delusions of grandeur and helping me have a more mature relationship with God and one that is going to allow me to tap into a higher power, you know, to hopefully relieve my compulsion and just really grateful for this program, grateful for this meeting. I have been struggling over the past few years, and so it's been great to have Vision for You, especially those Sunday special editions. I've been listening to those in the mornings as I get up and eat and make my breakfast, and just grateful to all of you for your voices, for your wisdom, for your experience, strength, and hope. And grateful to the first 100 and the 164 pages. So thanks, y'all. Have a good morning.
Thank you, Sean P. And Deborah, you're up, followed by Tony B.
Hi, my name is Wad. I'm living north of Toronto. And, I'm going to cry. I feel like I have arrived because this is my first time speaking on Vision to You, for you, and I've listened to all of the recordings, Sunday recordings, twice. And how this connects to the topic is that Bill is talking about his reflections on God and being accepted by Ebby and realizing Ebby's joy about being sober. And I have lots of reservations about being accepted by my community, which would be my fellow compulsive overeaters. And that's why I've listened to, spent 2 years listening. And so today is a big day for me. And for all those other people out there that maybe have been listening and not getting in, I hope you hear from me again. Come on in. We got to get in. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I think you said Deborah Y. Thank you for your share. Tony B., you're up. You have 3 minutes. If not, then Amelia can share. Otherwise, Amelia, if you'll hang around for the unrecorded hour. Tony B., please share with us.
Thank you. My name's Tony, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Scotland. Very grateful to be here, and thank you all very much for your shares. I love this meeting, and God bless all of you. So this time with Ebby, it really touches Bill, and, you know, it's God that touches him. God's at work through Ebby, and he has these memories, and I ask myself, you know, where did they come from? Why now? And you know, for me, I believe God opened Bill's heart to these memories at this time, and the Spirit is at work here. He remembers, he was asked, you know, would he like to sign a pledge to be sober when he was a young man? And, you know, the question again, why did that arise in him? It feels to me like a reminder of a, you know, a prediction back then, a seed that was planted by God, you know, that back then in his life. And makes me think how our lives aren't really linear time. You know, there are all kinds of moments, past and future, that are already in our knowing on the edges, you know, not quite seen, but sometimes felt when God wills them, I do think. And they're known, you know, very clearly to God, obviously. So this here, you know, he's already having a sense of God, and I think this is his first spiritual awakening. And, you know, there's no doubt in my mind God's there in each and every one of us, and that these kinds of miracles and moments that God shows us are very, very precious. And I've always found this paragraph very moving and true. And, you know, I always think of those kind of little things, little kind of, you know, little knowings that we're given. So thanks for letting me share, and I'll share the time.
Thank you, Tony B. Amelia, we have about 45 seconds if you want to say a little bit. Okay. Thank you. Thank you to everyone who shared this morning. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. The share ID for today, Wednesday, March 20th, 2024, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21,242. That's 21242. We will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And Kathy S., will you please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only until, keep you until then.
Yes. Good morning. This is Kathy S., recovered compulsive overeater in Georgia. Excuse me. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.